श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री ब्रजनाथालदार की जय, नृसिंह भगवान की जय, रामतरा श्रीमद भागवतन की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्तवृंद की जय, गौर प्रमान सो गुड afternoon, evening to all of you present here online as well. So thanks for coming and your time. So we are continuing today with our series of lectures on the Brahma Stuti. Actually today officially beginning with the Brahma Stuti per se. Today is our third lecture. We have two introductory lectures in which we try to give a little bit of context to the background of the prayers of Sri Brahmaji. And today we will begin with the first verse of chapter 14 on 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. But as usual, I'll make some brief recap of last class and somehow of the first class, since this was also described in the Brahma Vimohan Lila and just the point where Brahma began his prayers. But last class we had a second introduction class where we spoke a little bit about the significance and some intricacies connected to Brahma Stuti and Brahma Vimohan Lila. To begin with, we try to explore and unfold the implications of this idea of Krishna as two Bhagavans, which is so central in the Bhagavatam, which is so central in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, and which is so central in this section of the Bhagavatam in particular, when Krishna is showing, expanding himself and showing unlimited Narayans coming from this little one, Krishna, if you will. "Quote unquote little," and which plays out this idea of Krishna's two Bhagavans, and Krishna is the source of all forms of Godhead, even Narayan, even God Himself. Krishna is the source of God. That's a very Gaudiya idea. As I remember, once we were speaking in New Jersey, and this idea came that actually God is an aspect of Krishna. And one devotee was like, "What?" Had some epiphany moment, because generally you may speak about Krishna is God.
Speak personal.
Krishna is God. No, God is Krishna. God is a part, an aspect of Krishna. Narayan is an aspect of Krishna. Krishna is not God. I mean, he's God, but Narayan is God. Paramatma is God. Krishna is something more. He's God beyond God, basically. That's why we say the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, Godhead is here, and the Supreme Personality is above Godhead, if you will, above the idea of the Supreme. And as we mentioned, when Supreme, with lots of Prem, are there, as we will see today, the Godhead becomes upgraded in its ultimate form as Krishna, if you will. So Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Krishna's two Bhagavans, is the Paribhas Sutra, or this little aphorism, which is basically dictating and defining everything else that is being said around the Bhagavatam and even other scriptures. That's how far our Goswami have taken this Paribhas Sutra to show all Vedic literature. The Bhagavatam is the cream and the essence of all Veda, so that implies all Veda is revolving around Krishna's two Bhagavans, basically. So again, Sri Brahmaji was witnessing this in motion, the Paribhas Sutra in motion, unlimited Vishnu forms emanating from Krishna. The greatest Aishvarya of the whole Krishna Lila, of the whole Bhagavatam, is depicted in this section of the Bhagavatam. You won't find higher, greater Aishvarya than this one. And the point is, well, the greater Aishvarya is found in Braj, basically. Because the Bhagavatam is speaking about Vaikuntha, about Dwarka, about Mathura, about so many realms. But the highest degree of Aishvarya is found in this section of the Bhagavatam, which happens to be in Braj. So Krishna is exhibiting that. So implying the highest Aishvarya is in Vrindavan. And the Madhurya of Braj, the intimacy of Vrindavan, is only possible because Aishvarya is there at the backdrop, totally buried under layers and layers of intimacy, but Aishvarya is there. And that was allows Madhurya to happen. Krishna is still God, but nonetheless he behaves as the son of Yashoda. He's fully in that personality. He's not like he's calculating, I'm God, but I'll play like the son of Yashoda, so Herbatsalya is pacified. No, he's fully engrossed, if you will, in that sense of self, in that abhiman, with Yashoda, with his friends, with the gopis, and so on. So also we spoke how this section of the Bhagavatam is presenting to us a very unique portal into the Sakya Bhav possibility, which is one of the main windows of opportunity. We spoke a little bit about how this possibility is present actually in our lineage. It's not some form of, heterodox idea that came in time, but it's right there from the beginning of times, from the very first member of the Sampradaya. Although Madhurya Bhav will make the main current in the Sampradaya, nonetheless, as my Guru Maharaj would like to say, Sakya Rasa is like a supporting role, assisting in this main emotion in the drama of Krishna Lila. And we then, in that connection, we explored how one of the main, very, very, very main important representatives of our Sampradaya in modern times, Srila Prabhupada, had this affinity, and why he left this world by absorbing, translating the Brahma Vimohan Lila, chapter 13. And in terms of tattva, Krishna made him make this statement by leaving at that point, because in terms of tattva, there is nothing that Prabhupada emphasized more than Krishna's two Bhagavan Sayam, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he left right in that chapter with that point is made, again, very clear when Narayans are emanating from Krishna. And in terms of Bhav, Prabhupada had this affinity for Sakya Bhav, so the passing in that moment implies that portal and through which he entered into what we call Nityalila, Nityalila Pravishna. So, what else? And we concluded our previous lecture with mentioning that some groups, of course not in our school, but some groups, mostly Balav Sampradaya and here and there Madhva Sampradaya and others, some of them, not all, but consider these three chapters, 12, 13, 14 of the 10th canto as an interpolation, as something that was added in time, which was not part of the original version. And we analyzed some ideas as to why this is actually not possible. How names of Krishna as the killer of Agasura appear in other sections of the Bhagavatam, referring to that section basically. These same Leelas are described in other Puranas, not only in the Bhagavatam. So that will make those sections in other Puranas also interpolated or what? No? So it's not like this. Many Leelas, Stalis, places of pastimes in Braj nowadays, still prominent in connection to those Leelas because they are mentioned. Sridhar Swami, the famous ancient Bhagavad commentator, mentioning the Bhagavatam has 335 chapters, and if you take these three out, it will be 332. And he also says, and many Puranas say, the Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses. So if you take these three chapters, you will end up with 210 less or something. So again, that will create a whole bunch of other problems. Also, we mentioned, of course, some followers of Madhva Sampradaya reject them because Madhvacharya just not commented on them, or because they do not agree with the idea of demons attaining, asuras attaining mukti by being killed by Krishna. But we see many other sections outside of these three chapters with many demons being killed by Krishna attaining mukti, or even Vatsalya Prem like Putana, etc. Some other will argue, well, Brahma was blessed at the beginning of creation to not be affected by the Maya of Bhagavan, but that was concerning Mahamaya in terms of creation of the universes. But here we are speaking about Yogamaya. So Krishna didn't sign that part of the contract, if you will. No? So what else? And we conclude saying, well, and nobody can tell who did the interpolation, the so-called interpolation, when was that made? So we don't have really very much of deep arguments to think in those terms. And again, these two chapters are so important to the whole Bhagavad narrative that if you take them out, I mean, the Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam equation is not fully playing itself out as it does here. So we analyze in that sense how crucial are these chapters, this section. So that's what we saw last class. And since today we will begin with the first verse, let me very briefly, hopefully, go back to the first class very quickly just to remember where we stopped in the Leela, in the previous chapter. So Brahma's starting to pray here. So as you may recall, first we analyzed beginning of creation, Brahma expressing affinity towards Sakya Bhav. Krishna say, okay, Tathastu, in time that will play out. And then we analyze chapter 12, where Agasura is killed, and Brahma comes and sees this light entering to Krishna, and he's like, surprised what's going on. He kidnaps the boys, the cubs, he thinks so. Krishna expands for a year in these replica forms, and Brahma returns and thinks, what's going on here? He sees that everything is normal. So he goes back and forth, and he sees that the illusory replicas were in the cave, the other ones were in Braj, and the parents and the cows were loving them so much more because they were Krishna himself, without them knowing that. And eventually, as we know, Brahma's head starts to spin, first head, second head, third head. And eventually, Brahma is seeing all these calves and boys, and all of them take this form of multiple Narayans, and multiple Brahmas worshipping those Narayans, and Brahma witnessing that. And suddenly all this manifestation disappears, and only Krishna remains with a morsel of food, rice, and looking for the calves and boys. So at this point, Brahma's four heads, who is someone very capable, as we know, on a heady level especially, the architect of the universe, he falls from his swan to the ground of Braj, bathes Krishna's feet with his tears, and full of emotion, and still bimohan, still confused, starts to pray. So today we are starting there. We're starting with the very first prayer of the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So there, it is 40 verses, 40. Mm-hmm. So I don't know when I will finish this. Maybe this year, who knows when, where, no problem. We have eternity to lost and find ourselves there. So in this Brahma Vimohan Lila, just before starting with the first verse itself, as I mentioned, the logic of love is shown by Brahma, the Adiguru of our Sampradaya. The Siddhanta, as I said the other day, that underlies the bhava. No? The tattva, the philosophical truths that have to be there as a foundation, so proper ecstatic emotion eventually arises as a result of that, of a practice properly guided by Sambandha Gyan. So the goal of sadhana bhakti is bhava. So we are to engage in sadhana, properly guided by proper conclusions, proper sambandha guiding our avideya, and that in turn will take us to prayojan. So we will see how there's a very interesting sequence, a dynamic in the prayers of Brahma. There are 40, so Brahma is being transformed at every prayer, if you will, and getting closer and closer to his ideal of Sakya. Remember, he's taking darshan of the deity of his longing, if you will. So he will begin praying more in a bewildered way, an astonished way, but gradually we will see how his Aishvarya, as he realizes Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Remember, Brahma thought this is an imposter, and now he's realizing Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. He's not an imposter. He's the origin of Narayan. No? So he's like grasping this idea, I mean, while he's praying. No? So we will see his conversion, if you will, his transformation throughout the prayers, to the point of expressing his longing for Sakya, with his sadhana being attained maturation at this point, and eventually glorifying the bhava of the Brajavasis and in ecstasy at the very end of the prayers, basically. So this section also is very interesting because it entails someone like Brahma, who is not a Brajavasi. He will like, as because of his prayers, point to that. He would like to be Sakha, as we mentioned, but he's not yet. No? So it's some of those sections, one of those sections in the Bhagavatam, when someone who is not a Brajavasi is in Vrindavan nonetheless, and is like awakening to the reality of Vrindavan, and having made some gross mistakes, starts to pray. No? Like Indra, for example, after Govardhan Lila. It's a different situation, different example, but at one point, Indra also wanted to kill all the Brajavasis, as we know. And eventually he realized what was going on, and he offered prayers as well. So these are sections in the Bhagavatam which include people who are not from Braj, who have an experience of Braj, and who start to pray appreciating Braj and hankering for that, like Uddhava, eventually, when he also went to Vrindavan. He entered there as a foreign person, but somehow he left Braj transformed, basically, no? Experiencing a conversion. So this is an important point to have in mind throughout the series. No? Again, here the Gaudiya Siddhanta, Gaudiya Tattva is established, but is in connection to the bhava that they want, the characters here, like Brahma, are experiencing themselves as they get closer and closer to Vrindavan, no? To the Braja Bhava experience. The more they're getting closer to that, they pray and they express the Siddhanta in connection to that goal of that particular bhava in Vrindavan, which is our goal as members of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. No? And ultimately, as we will see, they will express their own longing. I want to go there. I want to be born here. I want to enter this situation. Mm-hmm. So again, this will become more and more apparent as we get closer to the last verses of the Brahma Stuti. There will be this sequential unfolding or development. But before Brahma will establish the very foundation of pure devotion, like making this point, if you don't have that clear, do not expect to enter the land of pure devotion. If you don't have a clue what is pure devotion, first you have to conceptually appreciate that. No, I like to think sometimes of sadhana bhakti as a theoretical appreciation of bhava bhakti. No? I mean, we are not in bhava bhakti, but we can learn, start to appreciate bhava, the bhava of those who have it, of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, of the greater personality. To learn to understand, to appreciate that bhava, in theory, where we are, we cannot just jump and imitate that, but we can study and appreciate. I mean, studying the Bhagavatam is basically, to begin with, we are witnessing the Braja Bhava and starting to somehow make sense of that and make that our prospect. That's Raga Anuga, to follow the emotion of one of those inhabitants. So first you have to catch those emotions, make sense of them, if you will, to the point that I want to become one of them. It just has to begin somewhere. So Brahma will start to present this underlying Siddhantic foundation that underlies, again, the Braja Bhakti project, if you will. And Brahma will be expressing lots of chamatkar, lots of like astonishment, well, awakening to this reality, what's going on here. And also realizing, who is Krishna? Because Brahma saw Krishna at the beginning of creation, and he had some idea, okay, this is Krishna, this is my guru, this is my father. But now he's realizing Krishna is something more of what I thought. And he's realizing that in proximity to the Braja Bhava. You follow my point? Mm-hmm. The more he becomes aware of the bhava of the Braja Bhava and how Krishna corresponds with that bhava, he realizes, I didn't know this face of Krishna. This is what happened to Uddhava. Uddhava was a very, in one sense, even more intimately connected with Krishna. He was his personal minister, secretary, and friend, and so many things in Dwarka. Mm-hmm. And so he had acquaintance. I know Krishna, in one sense. But when he went to Vrindavan and met Nanda, Yashoda, Gopas, Gopis, he realized, they have a type of love. They see Krishna in such a way, they love Krishna in such a way. I don't know that Krishna. I never saw Krishna that way. I never felt for Krishna. Like, this is a new Krishna for me. He was like rediscovering his own Istadev, basically. You follow? So yeah. He was convinced, I know Krishna. Yeah, he knows, of course. But there are so many layers of unknowing is loving, basically. No? So to Brahma, on his own level, Brahma is discovering a new Krishna here. He met Krishna at the beginning of creation, particular version of him, if you will, but now in Vrindavan and witnessing the Braja Bhava, that's like, this Krishna I do not know, the one who corresponds with this love. And that will be made clear along these prayers, how Krishna, Braja Krishna in particular, as I like to put it, is a byproduct of the love of the Brajavasis. It's a consequence. You take out the love of the Brajavasis, there's no longer Braja Krishna. You will have Narayan in Vaikuntha, Ram in Ajodhya, Brahman Nirvishesh. But you put Braja Bhav, and the absolute corresponding with that Bhav is called Braja Krishna. So you cannot separate the absolute and the love that somehow, poetically speaking, carves that form of the Absolute. The Absolute has many forms, and all of them are carved out of a particular type of affection that he basically lives to reciprocate with. Yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva vijame. Krishna says, I live for that. As you worship me, I will manifest accordingly. I will reciprocate accordingly. So This is what we will see. And before starting with the verse, I'm sorry if today I extend myself a little bit more than usual. I hope not to do so that much. I'd like to share a brief idea of how, which will be like the format of the classes. Just to have a notion. Sorry, there's one message. Sorry. So to begin with, of course, as usual, we are making some brief recap of the previous class. Then we will share the Sanskrit verse, Sanskrit shloka. Then we will go to the translation of the verse, in English translation. Then we will try to explain the word by word of each verse. And then I will start to comment on each verse by first of all invoking Baba Nubad that my Guru Maharaj wrote. Baba Nubad is kind of a retelling of the verse in one's own words, by also like adding some elements coming from other commentaries and one's own insights. So that's generally called Baba Nubad. So my Guru Maharaj, he wrote a Baba Nubad to each one of the verses of the Brahma Stuti, which will be published in his next book, Sakyamandal, or Circle of Friends. But he very generously shared that with me and with all of you.
Preview.
We have a trailer, yeah. Yeah. But he gave me some caution and advice in that connection. Not caution, but just some clarification that he asked me to extend to the audience. So I'd like to share what he told me in that point, because I think it's a very important point. He says, the spirit of the commentary that he wrote is from the vantage point of Sakya Rasa. And I am confident that this is the most accurate perspective from which to view these prayers, even as they contain tattva applicable to all of the Braja Rasas. Of course, the bhava here that I detect is underpinning the tattva and is thus subtle, while the tattva itself is overt. So, if you are going to comment on these prayers, here I am doing that, keep this in mind and inform your audience of this with the reference to my commentary. So, here I am just trying to follow his advice. So, that's an important point. No? There overtly will be, most of the prayers will be connected with tattva, siddhanta, or philosophy. But it's interesting to know which is the underlying bhav that is in Brahma's heart while he is presenting this tattva and siddhanta. So I will start sharing this. I will start after sharing the verse, sharing this Bhava Nubad of my Guru Maharaj. And then I will share some other commentaries which are central to this verse and to the Bhagavatam itself. Sridhar Swami, Sanatan Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, and another Gaudiya Acharyas. I mean, in this case, Srila Prabhupada has not commented on the Brahma Stuti because he passed away one chapter before, if you will. And so his disciples have commented, which mostly their commentaries are in connection with the Acharya's commentaries, basically. So I won't be mentioning every single time who said what. I will try to mention very tight, but just to keep some flow, I will be invoking the different ideas based on the commentaries and some insights that may come by their mercy. I won't be reading the totality of each Acharya commentary because that may be too much. We may need like a whole series for one verse for 40 classes or something. But I'll try to go to the most significant points, also because some commentaries are repeating things from the other commentaries. Sridhar Swami, which is the most ancient Bhagavad commentator for us, we find in Jiva Sanatan Goswami many points found in Sridhar Swami. Most of the points of Jiva Goswami's commentary are present in Sanatan Goswami's commentary, and so on. And my Guru Maharaj in his Baba Nubad also is including many of these points from the other commentaries. So I will try to not be like repetitive, although some points need repetition and we will try to to emphasize them as much as we can. So that said, let's begin with the first verse. You have there some printed letter. I will copy this also and paste here in the chat section for those online. So, see, Sorry, 1 second. It seems that it's too long of a sentence to share in the chat. So I'll share something smaller. Let's see if it works. Yeah. 1, 2. I'm putting Sanskrit and putting the... Okay. So. Okay. So the Sanskrit says like this. The meter or chanda of this verse and many other verses here is called Basanta Tilak. So different meters, different melodies. I mean, I don't want to torture you with all these technicalities, but this is the name of the meter here, Basanta Tilak. So it begins saying Sri Brahma Bacha. Sri Brahma said, to put the context, this will be spoken by Brahma. And it says like this. I'll repeat in Sanskrit, and then we will go to the translation. No midyati brahmapushi tada bambaraya gunjavatam sapari pichal sanmukhaya banyasra jekavala betra vishana venu lakshma shriye mridupade pashupanga jaya. So the translation, it says, Brahma is saying here, 1 second. I bow down to you, O worshipable one, who are the son of the cowherd Nanda, with soft feet, a cloud-complexioned body, and lightning-colored clothes. Your beautiful face is effulgently framed with earrings made of gunja berries and decorated with an ornament of peacock tail feathers. You wear a garland of forest flowers, and you look so sweet, holding yogurt and fruits in one hand, a flute, horn, and prodding stick in the other. So, Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai, Sri Brahma ji ki jai. So very nice depiction. This is kind of a very classical, what Jiva Goswami will call Mantramaya Upasana, which is this type of verses that kind of give us like a still picture in which we can focus our meditation. He speaks about Mantramaya Upasana Swarasikhi. No. Mantramaya Upasana, he compares like a still picture. Like if you have seen a movie and you put pause, and that's the scene, like one painting, if you will. Still picture you can focus and meditate in. And Swarasikhi, and that's to begin with, if you will. And the more you absorb yourself in that particular still picture, the movie starts to move, to play, no? And you are carried away by the different dynamics of the Leela, and you're actually serving there, that's Swarasikhi. So this is one famous verse, which we receive this ideal depiction of Krishna with his very defining elements, no? Like the peacock feather, and the complexion like the cloud, the pitambara, the lightning-like colored yellow cloth, he being the son of Nanda Maharaj, and again, holding some morsel of food in one hand. That's, remember, what Brahma is seeing at this present moment after all this Aishwarya manifestation disappeared. Krishna is standing there and Brahma starts to pray to him. So let's go briefly through the word by word meaning, and then we try to say something.
Did
more.
You say Vasanta
Tilaka? Yeah. Sri Brahma Upacha, of course, means Sri Brahma said. Nomi, so that's interesting, the very first word is Nomi, which has another word of saying Namo, Namaha, Namaste, which I offer pranam, I offer praise. No? So it's Brahma Stuti, the praises of Brahma, the prayers of Brahma. So Nomi Idya. Idya means O most worshipable one. So we'll see here there's a considerable degree of Aishwarya. Because again, Brahma is awakening to the reality, Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Some minutes ago thought he's an imposter, and now he's realizing he's the God of gods and God beyond God. So he's expressing his Aishwarya. But Nomi, Idya, all these words are full of Aishwarya. Nobody in Vrindavan will tell Krishna Nomi, Idya, or any of these weird things. No, I offer praise to you, O most worshipable one, and maybe in jest, in joking, no, like with Krishna, but not seriously. But Brahma is very serious here. So Nomi Idya Te, Te means unto you. Now, O most worshipable one, unto you I offer praise. Abhra Bapuse. And who are you now comes like the detailed definition. Abhra Bapuse means whose body is like a cloud. No? Depicting the the Ghanashyam, the color of Krishna's body. Tadit Ambaraya. Tadit Ambaraya means whose garments, whose clothes is lightning. Actually, the verse means whose body is a cloud. But actually, the idea is like a cloud. Whose clothes are lightning. They are like lightning. Sanskrit uses this type of expression. So the color of your clothes is like lightning. Gunja Avatamsa, who has ear ornaments made of gunja berries. Again, very defining attributes that you will find only in Krishna's, you will see. Paripicha. Paripicha means peacock feather, the ornament of peacock tail feathers, basically. He has an ornament of peacock tail feathers. Lasat Mukhaya, whose face is shining or resplendent. And remember, try always to keep in mind Brahma's emotional situation. He's not saying just like officially, he's crying and totally experiencing and conversion in this moment and having Krishna after all that he saw. Each of these words is loaded with spiritual emotion. Banyasraje means he's wearing a forest garland, basically. Banya means from the forest, Raje means garland. Banamali, also, he's the one who wears Banamala. Kavala, with he has a morsel of food, remember, in his hand, probably left one. Betra refers to stick. Krishna has a cow herding stick that he uses for herding the calves, in this case. Calf herding stick. Bishana means a buffalo horn, how is it in English? Bugle?
Bugle.
Bugle. Buffalo horn bugle. So that's also there. Brahma is appreciating all these like defining characteristics of him. Venu, I think you know what does it mean? The flute. Lakshma means characterized by. And that applies to all the things that were mentioned. You are defined, characterized by all these defining items. Shriya means whose beauty. I'm giving the general meaning of each word. As we will see, our acharyas will, as Sanskrit lends itself out to that, there's many possible other meanings to each word. But I'm giving the basic official one here, in the word by word. So Shriya means whose beauty. Mridu Pade means whose feet are soft. Pade means feet, and Mridu means soft. Pashupa means of the cowherd, referring to Nanda Maharaj, and Angajaya means unto the son. So the son of Nanda Maharaj, unto that, again, I offer Nomi, praise. And to he who is the son of Nanda Maharaj, who has, again, soft feet, whose beauty is unparalleled, who is characterized by all these defining attributes, I offer my pranam to him. So again, Brahma is awakening to the reality of Krishna. Of Krishna's two Bhagavan. So yeah, so this is the very first verse. I'll read the the brief commentary of my Guru Maharaj. I will maybe comment some things in between. Maybe stop to take a breath after each paragraph because we will require some of that. And then we will go to some of the main commentators. So he's calling his Bhavanubad Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. So he says like this. Brahma begins his prayers by respectfully glorifying the form of Krishna as he appears before him, expressing his desire to attain that prem of which this particular form is the object. The Vishaya Alambana Vibhav of Sakyarati. Now, here some terms coming from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami when he analyzes the five elements of rasa, one of them being Vibhav, divided into Alambana, Udipana, and then Vishaya, Ashraya. I don't want to enter into details here. But Vishaya, Alambana, Vibhava means basically Krishna is the perfect object of love for Sakyarati, which is the prem that Brahma is longing for. So try to imagine this. You have a desire for a certain type of love, and the perfect ideal form that corresponds with that love is appearing before you, finally. So Brahma is seeing that. Brahma didn't see at the beginning of creation that yet, because his own desire for Sakyabhava was not that mature. So Krishna was not revealing in a correspondingly mature form. Mm. But now, Brahma sadhana took him to the point of maturity. So Krishna, the corresponding ideal form for his Bhav, Prem, Sakya Prem, is appearing in front of him. And this is the form he's describing in this verse. First, Brahma describes Krishna's form in terms of its sham complexion, comparing it to a soothing rain cloud. His body wrapped in the golden dress of a cowherd that resembles lightning. Krishna's form is, of course, further illumined by the prem of his eternal associates, and as such is like a rain cloud of love showering down upon his thirsty earthly sadhakas. No? So he's adding that, okay, Krishna's form is of this color, no? Cloud, body's clothes are lightning, so all these poetic analogies connected to the to heaven, no? You have the clouds, you have lightning, and the only thing that is missing is rain. So here it's mentioning, no? Krishna is surrounded by prema madhurya, by the type of sweet love coming from his associates, and in that way he's reciprocating with the love of his devotees. So in that sense he's like a abundant, I mean he's a dark cloud, and exactly the color of Krishna's hue is connected to the cloud which is about to downpour torrential rain, if you will. And that has to do with mercy and love, no? So here my Guru Maharaj is completing the equation. Okay, there is cloud, there is lightning, where is the rain? In the form of the loving interaction, how Krishna reciprocates with his thirsty earthly sadhakas, and sometimes compared to the chataka birds who are just like waiting for, living upon the water coming from the rains. So in this way, paritranaya sadunam, Krishna says in the Gita. No? The main reason why Krishna comes to this world, he said many things. No? To protect my devotees, to chastise the impious, to establish dharma. But the first one is the most important, paritranaya sadunam. I protect my devotees doesn't mean just, I don't know, there may be physically attacked by some asuras, but mostly I come for those sadhakas who are so mature in their bhajan that they can no longer sustain their life in separation from me. So they need protection. And protection is I will come to their lives and I will appear in front of them. So that's why the main reason why Krishna is coming. For those thirsty earthly sadhakas, if you will. And Brahma is at this point. Basically, he's so mature in his body and Krishna is coming to give him mercy. So it continues, the next paragraph, one more. However, these symptoms that I've mentioned now, hue, the color of the complexion and the cloth, since these are also features of Narayan, he has the same hue, he has the same color of cloth, dark complexion and golden dress, since these are the features of Narayan, would not such praise be more appropriately offered to Narayan himself? Are not Krishna's complexion and dress properly understood those of Narayan? To dispose of this doubt, Brahma then seeks to distinguish Krishna from Narayan and assert the superiority of his form by praising Krishna's forest ornaments, his gunja berry earrings, the flowers in his hair and over his ears, placed there with the prem of his sakas, along with his forest flower garland, which are not found in Narayan, this flower forest ornaments. Narayana is not so ornamented with intimate fraternal love, and as such lacks the sweetness of Krishna. So my Guru was making the point, yes, Krishna has forest ornaments that Narayan doesn't have, but actually the real ornament is the love of his devotees who are putting those things in Krishna's body. He's adorned by the love of his devotees, basically, by the sakas who are decorating Krishna with flowers and garlands. At this time, again, remember, Krishna at this point is not yet relating with the gopis in romantic interaction yet. He's too young for that in the unfolding of the lila. So these type of things are coming from Krishna's sakas. So in that way, Narayan, with of course all due respect to him, he's not adorned by that type of love because there is no Sakya Bhava in Vaikuntha, basically. In that sense, the superiority of Krishna above Narayan starts to be established from verse 1. The ontological superiority of Krishna above Narayana, which Brahma is realizing here. So, nor is Narayan crowned with Krishna's peacock feather that Brahma also praises. A crown representing both head, knowledge, its eyes, not because the peacock feather seems to have an eye, so that has to do with the knowledge and head, and heart love, its beauty. No? The peacock feather is very aesthetic. It has to do with beauty and heart and love. So the two things are combined in the peacock feather, heart and head, if you will. The feather's eyes are wise in that they are blinded by love to find it fault. Such is Krishna, known more for mercy than any other form of himself. So that's the blindness of love. You know, like Meghunaras quotes, the mother will call his blind son Padmalochan, beautiful lotus-eyed, although he's blind. But she loves his son, so she's blind to that blindness, basically. And my Guru Maharaj ends with, that doesn't end yet. He puts a footnote here, interesting point. He says, although Krishna's transcendental eroticism has not yet manifested in the pages of the Bhagavatam, at this point of the Leela, Krishna's peacock feather also represents his romanticism. For as the peacock raises his colorful feathers, dancing in courtship as if looking in all directions for love, so too does Krishna look in all directions for Radha and dance under her influence. I was with you here, I don't remember, but we mentioned how even if you pay attention to how the peacock feather exposed, the name of Radha is included there. So Krishna is keeping her name above his head at every moment. No? Love is above God. One last paragraph. Brahma also asserts that while majestic Narayana has four hands, Krishna has two. And as indicated by the fact that in his left hand Krishna held cowherd yogurt rice, so it was in his left hand, stolen from his friend's plate and a herding stick in his right hand, this dvibhuj, or two-handed form, of Gopal Krishna is more charming, affording his devotees a variety of love not available in Narayan's abode. Brahma thus praises Krishna's hands and the items they hold, as well as his soft, sweet feet, which, due to insufficient body weight and underdeveloped markings on his soles during his Kumar age, leave no distinct footprints in the forest. So at this point, Krishna's body is not leaving footprints yet. When he's more heavy in age and in weight, those footprints and the markings of the footprints will be there. And all Brajavas will keep all those footprints in such a way that they are always there for them to as udipana, as a stimulant. Brahma also praises Krishna's horn and flute and then distinguishes Gopal Krishna from Vasudev Krishna of Mathura by praising him as the cowherd son of Nanda, Pasupangajaya, with intense longing to attain his company as a cowherd friend. So that's again the context. No? Brahma longs for Sakyabhav, and he concludes this first verse by glorifying Krishna. You are the son of Nanda Maharaj. Narayan is not the son of Nanda Maharaj. And even Krishna, in other forms, he's not known as the son of Nanda Maharaj. But Vasudev Krishna, Mathuresh Krishna, Dwarakesh Krishna. But we see which is the focus of Brahma here. Braja Krishna in Sakyabhava. So, that's the end of my Guru Maharaj's Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad, a commentary on this verse. And I will, with your permission and hopefully generous time, we have some minutes, I'll try to explore and unfold part of this content through taking the hands of our Purva Acharyas also in their commentaries. So as I mentioned, this verse is a very classical depiction of Krishna and his main defining attributes. And this is not the only verse that says that. So I would like to mention briefly some other verses that you will also find a very similar description. To begin with, in Gopal Tapani Upanishad, you can see that in the first part, verses 9 and 10. You will see something similar there. But mostly I would like to concentrate on two other verses that come in the Bhagavatam as well. Not the same verse, as we spoke the other day, that there are identical verses in the Bhagavatam. In this case, they are not identical, but they are similar. To begin with, interestingly, this verse that we are studying today is also invoked in the Gaur Lila in different occasions. No? For example, when Mahaprabhu, when Srivast Thakur was worshipping his Narasimha deity in his house, Srivastangam, at one point Mahaprabhu comes and starts to knock on the door because the door was closed. And Srivast Thakur was worshipping. He closed the door and his Mahaprabhu knocked and opened the door. He started to speak like roaring. Now, that one you are worshipping is calling you here, he was saying, no? In almost Narasimha spirit. And Srivast Thakur opens the door, Mahaprabhu is showing this part and tells in Aishwarya Bhav to Srivast, offer me prayers. Interesting. And interestingly, this is the verse that Srivast Thakur offers in praise.
Yeah.
No? Because you may say he's speaking in Narasimha spirit, but he's not offering praise to Narasimha, he's offering praise to Braja Krishna. Very, of course, we know who is Srivast Thakur, as we mentioned. No? Srivast Thakur is Madhu Mangal. No? Interestingly, Braja Lila. And Madhu Mangal is Priyanarma Sakya of Krishna, very intimate friend. No? And this verse, of course, is spoken by someone with that same affinity. Because again, when a devotee in Sakya Bhav sees even Narasimhadev, he will see he's a manifestation of my Braja Krishna. He's not creating a dichotomy. So he's praising him according to that particular Bhav. And interestingly also, in another section of Gaur Lila, this verse is quoted when Nityananda Prabhu first appears among Mahaprabhu's associates. As you know, he joins them a little bit later than the rest. And Nityananda appears, as you know, as Avadut, difficult to understand. So Mahaprabhu always is trying to make sure that nobody misreads Nitai, misunderstands him. Mahaprabhu is always taking care that Nitai behaves properly and that everyone understands his behavior, which is kind of inverted role than in Krishna Lila. In Krishna Lila, Balaram, Nityananda is taking care that Krishna is not misbehaving. In Gaur Lila, Krishna's Mahaprabhu is taking care that Balaram as Nityananda is not misbehaving. And that others are understanding him properly. So at one point where everyone was seeing Nityananda avadutness, he wanted everyone to have it clear who is Nityananda. So he asked Srivas Pandit again, recite the verse so others understand which is the position of Nityananda. So Srivas Pandit again recited this verse. Sorry. He recites another verse, sorry. But it's a verse, it's a similar verse to this one, which is fifth verse of the Venu Gita, chapter 21 of Barhapidam Natavara Bapu Karnayu Karni Karam, a very famous verse. Now I will go to them. This, because this verse that Srivas recited here is almost similar to today's verse and another verse, three verses that appear in the Bhagavatam. So let me briefly mention those three verses, just for if you like to go through them. So one will be found in all of them in 10th canto. One of them is found in 23rd chapter, 22nd verse, when the Dvija Patnis, the wives of the Brahmins that were engaged in the Yajna, you know the story, that they were not willing to feed Krishna's friends and eventually their wives did. So at one point they offered. I won't enter into each one of the verses because it may take too long, but you can do your research, no? 10, 23, 22. So they praise to Krishna, they praise to Balaram at one point. But of course, they are not in the position to relate to them as I don't know, the Braja Gopikas, for example. Interestingly, they are Brahmanis by birth. And interestingly, Krishna, although in some way he breaks all rules of Varnashram in the Lila, he keeps following some points. And in this case, he will say, I cannot associate intimately with you because you are Brahmanis and I am Vaishya. No? So that's not a fitting combination according to Varnashram sensibilities, if you will. We are different caste? Yeah.
Caste.
So this Dvija Patnis are somehow standing on the borderline between Aishwarya and Madhurya. It is said that they live in the border between Mathura and Vrindavan. So that geographical borderline also speaks about their inner borderline in Bhava. No? A little bit like this, a little bit like that. So they behold Krishna's beauty, but according to their own sweet mood. So you can see the verse, they will be mostly praising Krishna in connection to these defining attributes of him, peacock feather, flute, the cloth, the complexion. But again, in each verse, there is the mood of who speaks the verses. So a second verse very famous in this connection, maybe the most famous, is this one from the Beno Gita, which the gopis, I mean, Sukadeva Goswami is mentioning this verse in the context of presenting the Beno Gita of the gopis, the song of the flute. So basically the gopis are saying this same thing here, no? Like Krishna has peacock feather, has flute, he's with his friends entering the forest. Actually this painting is basically depicting, this famous painting is depicting that verse. Varhapidam natavaro varhapidam karnayo natavara bapu karnayo karnikaram. So you are king of dancers, you are karnayo karnikaram, you have flowers in your ears, vibrat basa kanak, yeah, kapisam bayayanti chaman, you have the bayjayanti garland, and you are playing your flute, brindaranya sapadaramanam pravisa gita kirti. You are entering the forest accompanied with your friends who are engaged in kirtan. So the gopis are visualizing this while hearing the flute of Krishna in the distance. So I remember we gave a very nice, I think we needed two lectures to explain that verse in our Beno Gita series in Madhavan, like a few months ago. But for those who would like to go into the details of this verse, which are, there are a lot, those classes are there. And then finally, we have this verse that we are studying today, when Brahma is again expressing some majesty, some Aishwarya, as I mentioned, mixed with this, of course, there's awe and reverence, and again, his longing for Sakya is blocked, his budding longing is blossoming more and more, so all these influences are playing themselves out at this point, and as we'll see first, we'll see a big proportion of Aishwarya here. Again, Nomi, which means praise or obeisances, Idya, which means supremely worshipable object. Arguably, in these three verses, here is when we find the most Aishwarya, no? In comparison to the Dvijapatnis, in comparison to Sukadeva and the Beno Gita. Because, as my Guru Maharaj mentioned, Brahma is accustomed to worship Krishna. There's one manifestation of him in Brahmalok, Mahapurush, sometimes called Yajnabhuk, who only eats by Yajna, as we mentioned. And now he's realizing, oh, that form that I was worshipping in Brahmalok, that I long to relate to in Sakya, is different from the one I was. I mean, the ultimate corresponding form to my budding sentiment is different from the one I was worshipping in Brahmalok. So Brahma is realizing the object of his affection here, and how to say, he's having like a slight apprehension in the sense of, I'm seeing Krishna in this way here now, and I'm feeling like this, I'm feeling attracted to love him like a friend, if you will, but I'm accustomed to something else. I'm used to worship him, Brahmalok, with certain rituals and awe and reverence. So Brahma is praying and he's wondering, like, I'm hoping I'm saying the right thing here with all these things I'm saying. Basically, Brahma in this verse is saying, Krishna, you are beautiful. I love you. But also he's wondering, is it right to say so? Because again, the standard of worship in Brahmalok and etc. is more like formal. But now he's facing Raja Krishna Vrindavan and feeling this call in Sakya, like, oh, you're beautiful in this form. I feel, I love it, I would like to, but it's okay to say that? Something. So Brahma is in this apprehension, this time, in the midst of this situation. No? And as we will see, as the prayers evolve, his Aishwarya is turning more and more to intimacy, you know, to longing. Anyhow, so let's go. I want to mention that regarding to these other two verses of the Bhagavatam. Let's make a brief recap of some of the main points of the commentators, with your permission. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami, the ancient commentator here. So he will begin saying that in the 14th chapter, Brahma still puzzled. Remember, Bimohan, still his foreheads are spinning. Brahma still puzzled after seeing the wonder and unable to determine exactly what happened. Because again, he's starting to figure out what's going on here. He's praising Krishna. So still bewildered, he's praising Krishna. Not fathoming the Lord's glory and trembling out of fear due to the offense he committed. Because he's becoming aware, I committed aparad to the form of Bhagavan. I consider that like an imposter-like form. And I'm realizing that form. So Brahma is speaking here to glorify Krishna only as much as he could understand him till now, Again, he's realizing Krishna in different levels along the different verses. So he will gradually will more. It's more to understand for Brahma, so he becomes upgraded to a Brajavasi position, if you will. He has not reached that standard yet, but getting closer and closer. We'll speak about that at the end of the prayers, and we'll see how eventually Brahma reached his ultimate purpose by being born as Haridas Thakur in Gaur Lila. Haridas Thakur is called Brahma Haridas. So it is said that Brahma, who has a very high position by the offense to Krishna's form here, he was born as an outcast in Gaur Lila. And he offended the form, as my Guru Maharaj will say. He offended the form of Krishna here by considering it like a hoax. But still, although the form was offended, the name of Krishna still remained with Brahma as Haridas Thakur and remained a lot to the point of being the Namacharya. So he took the name, he fully embraced the name, and he realized everything else and attained his longing there. I'd like to share some words from Srinath Chakrabarti. He's a very interesting personality and commentator. He, as I mentioned, there are many alternate meanings to the verses and to the words. Sanskrit lends itself out to multiple interpretations, and our acharyas play a lot with this and create lots of rasa, basically lots of relishment of all the implications present here. And of course, the way of fully fathoming this is to know Sanskrit, then you really relish that. But I'll try to share as much as I can and as much as we can relish by not having to know Sanskrit by going through the translations, and certain level at least. So Srinath Chakrabarti is saying, the object of the verb, tuam means you, needs to be added here. The word you is not here. So technically speaking, that's missing. But Srinath Chakrabarti say, yeah, it could be considered like a technical fault, but actually since that omission is connected to some part of Brahma's emotion at the moment, it's actually an ornament. It's not a fault, because he's speaking about how he's feeling there. So Brahma couldn't say it, says Srinath Chakrabarti, on account of trembling out of consternation. Like when Arjuna was saying the Bishvarup in the Gita, there are a few verses which are missing, lacking some syllables. And technically speaking, they are not completing the meter. But the commentator said, no, this has happened because Arjuna is so astonished, he's speaking wrongly. But wrongly, quote unquote. I mean, actually that's serving to broadcast his emotion at the moment. So that's an ornament. It's not the fault. So again, remember, Brahma is the most worshipable person in the world, the highest position here. And Brahma did not consider Krishna the most worshipable Lord when he thought this is an imposter. So now he's realizing all that. So there's place for consternation, there is place for further bimohan, if you will. And remember, Brahma Vanaloka, the highest possible post on all the multiverse. Let's go to Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhashana Toshani. He says that Brahma here implies the following. He gives like his own version of the verse. O praiseworthy one. Again, Nomi, Idya. That is, only you, neither Brahma nor Vaikuntha Nath, Narayana, nor any other avatar of yours are worthy of being praised, because avatars and others were seen in you, Parabrahman, today. Therefore, I praise you. For what purpose, says Sanatana Goswami? Only to attain you. So basically, Sanatana Goswami makes his point. Brahma is realizing, oh my God, only you are worthy of praise. I mean, I'm the most praised person on the planet, Brahma says, but now in comparison to you, I mean, I'm nothing. Even Narayan, in comparison to you, are all your avatars, only you are worthy of praise. Of course, there is an emotion here. He's not offending other avatars. We have to understand also the emotional context. It's like when Prabhupada Saraswati mentioned, I think Chaitanya Chandramrita, like he says, and you have to understand the emotional context. He said, who cares that Baraha came and lived the earth? Who cares that Matsya did what he did? Who cares? Now Mahaprabhu came and he's given this thing to the world. who cares for any other avatars? So we have to be careful. I mean, if we imitate that, we maybe offend those false forms. But he's saying that out of bhava, in further appreciation of that. So somehow, on another level, Brahma is saying the same thing. You are the only worshipable thing. Nor me, nor Narayan, nor any other form. This is the form. You are the source of all avatars. Because I've seen just some minutes ago, all these forms coming from your form. Now, remember, he has this fresh realization, epiphany, he has just some minutes ago, Narayan is coming from Krishna. And that's why I'm praising you, Sanatana Goswami said. And if someone will ask, but why the praise? And he replies, just to attain you. And again, to attain you in a particular way, in Sakyabha, not just generic attainment, but I want you in a particular way. So we praise Krishna so we can continue praising Krishna after we have attained him, something like that. Let's go to what Srila Jiva Goswami has to share with us today. He says, this is coming from Krama Sandarbha, which is like a seventh Sandarbha, if you will, when he kind of compiles what he mentioned in the six Sandarbhas in connection to different sections and verses of the Bhagavatam. Determining that the lotus feet of Krishna were the highest goal, Brahma begins to praise that form. In Anucheda 56 of the Bhagavad Sandarbha, also Jiva Goswami quotes this verse, and the title of that section is Krishna's form is the ultimate of all that is to be attained. So to further make that point, he quotes this verse, not like implied. That form is the ultimate of all that is to be attained. This is what Brahma practically is trying to say here. All the other forms, all respect to them, but this is the ultimate, the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna Stupa Bhagavan Swayam. Try to keep this Krishna Stupa Bhagavan Swayam in the backdrop of all these prayers, because that's what Brahma is realizing here. And also Jiva Goswami, his commentary, Lagu Vaishnav Toshani, he has a commentary to the 10th canto. He's paraphrasing Brahma. Generally, the Goswamis do this paraphrasing in their purpose, like to shed further light. So he paraphrases Brahma in the following way. Almost worthy of worship, again, Idya, you are worthy of praise because today I have seen the whole material and spiritual realms enter into and emerge from you, the Supreme Brahman, composed of power and sweetness. Therefore, I praise you. So another way of why he's praising Krishna, what he's finding in those forms, in that form. So many forms, material realms, spiritual realms, everything coming from that. And interestingly, he said, you are the Supreme Brahman composed of power, which means Aishwarya, and sweetness. No? So again, Brahma is having more and more realization of this sweetness side and becoming more and more inclined towards the Madhurya. And Jiva Goswami said, but however, to this Krishna may reply, now comes this in between the lines dialogue that are classical in our Goswamis, especially in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But Jiva Goswami here is also sharing. Krishna may reply to Brahma, haven't you already attained me in my forms of Brahman and Paramatma? In that regard, Brahma invokes two modifiers to further clarify this point. Abhravapushe, you who have a body like a cloud, as we mentioned. So, like implying, that's different from Brahman, Paramatma, and Tadidambaraya, whose garments are like lightning. No, like to specify, no, I refer to Bhagavan and this particular form of Bhagavan. So since we invoke this in between the line, let's go to and close with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sarartha Darshani, which are like, I mean, I'm biased towards his commentary. That's very unique, very unique, very unique, very sweet, and very lots of this in between the lines. No, what's going on in between the lines of one verse and dialogues in between this Krishna and here Krishna and Brahma, but in every single section Krishna and the Gopis. So really expanding on the content very sweetly. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying some things before the in between dialogue. Like you are a body similar to a cloud. That's an interesting point that will be further made in the next verse. We can say Krishna has a body like a cloud, or Krishna is a body like a cloud. Because why? He's not different from his body. We are not this body, but Krishna is his body. You cannot make a difference between Krishna and Krishna's body. And both are a spiritual reality, basically. So somehow we can understand this expression, abhravapuse. You are a body similar to a cloud. You don't have a body. You are. And also he says that means that he removes the heat of the earth's distress. Like the cloud and the rain. No? Oh. He's showering, the cloud showering rain and creates like relief if one is affected by the heat on earth. By Krishna's being present on earth, that he is here, but he's present with his cloud-like body, he's raining and creating relief, raining mercy and creating relief on the inhabitants and earth, Brahma being, not from earth, but being affected by that mercy here. And then your garments are like lightning, tadid ambaraya. Vishwanath says that this modifier combined with abhravapuse, with body like a cloud, signifies that Krishna is giving life to the chataka bird-like devotees. Well, there's a play of word here. No, like he's a, basically he's raining, like rain gives life on this world, the devotees, what I mentioned before, no, paritranaya sadhana. The chataka-like devotees are just living on what comes from above. They're only living for Krishna, depending on his mercy, he's raining mercy in them. Then, if Krishna says, now comes the unique dynamics of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. If Krishna says, but isn't it that Sri Vaikuntheshwar and others are like these two? Remember, Krishna is playing, he's fully absorbing his Nara Lila in Vrindavan. He's not like, I am God, here I am. So Brahma is praising, like, you are almost worshipable, but Krishna replies in Mukdata, like very naive, transcendental naivete. But all that you are saying here is not pertaining to Narayan by Kunteshwaran and so many other. To expect in this reply, as we know, Brahma will mention dissimilarities from these forms, like the Gunjamala, Peacock Feather, Vanamala, no, which are only present in Sri Krishna, in Vrindavan. Srinath Chakravarti, in between, let me add this, he also is sharing the same idea. He said, he's paraphrasing Krishna, Srinath Chakravarti, saying him to Brahma, one who is praiseworthy is indeed praised. So who I am, the son of a cowherd, worthy of being praised by you, Brahma? You yourself, Brahma, Krishna is saying, you have just said that I'm the son of Nanda Maharaj. So I'm the son of a cowherd, and you are Brahma. So why you are saying that I am praiseworthy? I think it should be the opposite. In this way, Krishna is further bewildering Brahma, if you will. But also inviting him to, this is what Sakya Rasa is about. You want Sakya with me? Well, I behave in certain ways in that context, basically. So gradually, Brahma is having a further glimpse of all this. And in that regard, of course, when Krishna is saying, I'm not worthy of praise, in reply to that, Brahma is saying here, Idya. No? Idya means, oh, you are worshipable Lord. No, you should be praised, actually. And actually praising any other person apart from you, Srinath Chakravarti says, artavad. Artavad means like, what do you say in English? Like bland glorification? Like superficial, it's not deep, it's like, an, yeah. But praising you is entirely according to the truth. All praises should go with you, Brahma. And Krishna again, I am the formless Brahma. Now Krishna invokes Samaishvarya. I am the formless Brahma. So can I be praised as such? Maybe? No? As Brahma? What do you think, Brahma? So in this regard, Brahma says, abhravapuse, Srinath Chakravarti mentions. No, you who are that dark-like body like a cloud, that's who I'm referring to. In Brahman, there's no difference, there's no body, there's nobody there. I'm pointing to you, you are the most worshipable. But Krishna replies, then is Narayan to be praised? Because Narayan has a similar color. And Brahma denies this by mentioning, again, Gunjamala, Peacock Feather, Vanamala, and Flute, no? That only are found in Krishna. Also, since we mentioned Gunjamala, the word Gunjabatamsa in the verse refers to these Gunja earrings. Interestingly, the Acharya Srinath Chakravarti mentioned this can be taken as evocative. And again, we are entering into some Sanskrit technicalities here. But basically means, it can mean, like again, Gunja berries decorating the year, or Gunja Batamsa can mean, oh, you who are the ornament of transcendental sound. Oh. So, Gunja. Gunja also can refer to Abhyakta Shabda or Shabda Brahma, transcendental sound. No? So Sanskrit lends itself for that. So it's interesting because the very word that refers to one little fruit, if you will, also speaking about transcendental sound according to context. Mm-hmm. So they are saying that. Yeah, you can also, that this can also mean that Brahma is telling Krishna, and it's, both of them are correct. It's not that one thing is wrong and the other is real. All of them are simultaneously applicable. You have Gunja berries decorating your ears, or you are the ornament of transcendental sound. Mm-hmm. It's not that Gunja berries are your ornament, but you are the ornament of Shabda Brahma, which Shabda Brahma is another way of saying sound revelation, the revelation that comes through Shastra. And you are the ultimate ornament of Shastra, if you will. You are the ultimate point in point. The Bhagavatam says, Param Bhushanam Bhushanam Bhushanangam. You are the ornaments of your ornaments. Many, many things that the Bhagavatam are saying. Also, Paripiccha, now we'll go to some of these alternative meanings of some words. Paripiccha generally refers to peacock feather. If you apply paripiccha, modifying bapuse refers to the body, bapu refers to body, modifying the body of Krishna, this is something you can do with Sanskrit a lot. One word modifies one or can modify other, and it creates so many meanings. So if you take paripiccha, modifying bapuse, mean in which body the face is serene and which has a trick, which has magic, that has an increase all around. Pari means all around. Mm-hmm. Or also means you whose tricks expand everywhere. Yes. Tricks. Trick. Like you said the other day, Krishna is a trickster. Mm-hmm. No? Right. Divine trickster. So paripiccha can refer to, again, peacock feather decorating your head, or you who have a body which is full of magic, basically. Mm-hmm. No? You who are a very tricky personality. No? Transcendentally tricky. You are a trickster. So pari means around, like what you say, parikram. Or pari refers to something like around something, or everywhere. So again, you whose tricks expand everywhere. Brahma is starting to realize this. I mean, he just had a very comprehensive like experience of that, no? Of Krishna's energy and yogamaya and so on, and many more to come, if you will. Also, Sanmukhaya, the word Sanmukhaya in the verse, who refers to his face, which is a very beautiful face. You have a very, very, very beautiful face. Sanmukhaya also can refer to San, you can connect that with Sat, and that applies to the sadhus, to the devotees. So Sanmukhaya, apart from meaning beautiful face, will mean in which the face is for the devotees. Mm-hmm. No? Like implying Krishna's face is for his devotees. He's facing his devotees. No? He's always looking in that direction, and his face is for them, basically. No? The main part, if you will, of the body, the face, no? He's looking unto them, and he's dedicating his face to, he's glancing unto them, and they are looking at him, and so on. I mean, so many implications. We can just give one lecture. What does it mean that Krishna's face is for his devotees? That's just whole series. So I'm in quite an anxiety here trying to summarize all this. But that's a healthy anxiety, because you have a glimpse of how much is in revelation, that there's no end to that. So we have this hope that okay, we'll be in eternity for eternally speaking about this, and there will be no end for that. There's a place for eternally, again, kirtaniya sadahari katayantashnamam nityam. So one more argument before finishing. Well, finally, Krishna may say at this point to Brahma, you Brahma, you were born from Narayan, Garbhodaksai Vishnu and the lotus there. So why do you abandon him? Krishna saying, you are eulogizing, you say? Mm-hmm. Me. No? Like Krishna presents it like, we are different. Why you are abandoning him and eulogizing me? And in response to that, Brahma is saying here, Abra. Abra, interestingly, apart from the general meaning, means he who sustained Narayan. Again, I don't want to torture with the technicalities of Sanskrit, but A will refer to Narayan, and Bra is a Sanskrit root for sustaining. So it means you who sustained Narayan. And that will be shown in very famous verse, 14th verse of this chapter, where Narayan will be described by Brahma as an anga of Krishna.
Wow.
Not the opposite. Krishna is the angi, Narayana is an anga of Krishna. So this idea of abra means this point. And this, that's why how Brahma replies, that's why I'm elogizing you and I have left Narayan. I have not left Narayan. I'm realizing Narayan is an anga of yours, basically. And additionally, also the commentators mentioned that, remember, Krishna, Brahma is attracted to Sakya, sometimes called the Balya Lila, or the childhood pastimes of Krishna. So he will refer to his attraction by defining some of these elements that are so typical to the age of Krishna that corresponds with Sakya. He said, Kavala Bitra Vishana Venu Lakshma Sriye. Now you have this morsel a mouthful of rice and yogurt in your hands, just taken from the picnic with your friends, in your left hand, that's pretty Sakya-like, breaking all etiquette. And you have this staff, this horn, all these attributes that also your friends have. Almost Brahma is saying, I'd like to have those with me as well. I'd like to be decorated with those as well. Now you have a flute, the garment, and again, all these Brahma is considering Lakshma Sriye, which means uncommon attributes, very beautiful attributes. Sriye means beautiful, and Lakshma means like Lakshana, like characteristics. So basically, Brahma is praising here, Krishna's Dvibhuj above Narayan Chaturbhuj, saying, oh, this human-like form of yours, with two arms, and in each arm, a morsel of food here, a stick there, is so charming, so enchanting. How you dress, I mean, generally we know someone, if you want to put it like that, one of the ways of knowing someone is how the person dresses and what the person eats. So here Brahma is addressing those two elements, no? How Krishna is sitting, left hand, totally. He's a god of informality. How he's dressed, that's the charm of Nara Lila. And again, Brahma is discovering this increased charm that he's feeling more and more. And then he said Mridupade, just to finish. Mridupade, which means you have tender feet. So again, tender feet means feet that are suitable for a small child. As we mentioned, my Guru Maharaj mentioned before, still not too heavy, too big. The marks of the foot soles are not yet too clear. No? So these are feet that correspond with Sakya, with the age of Krishna, in which he's not so much developed, and that fully correspond, this Poganda age that Krishna is about to enter with Sakya. So again, of course, it is said that Brahma is kind of starting to discover all this, so he's not overtly saying here that. He's not saying, I don't know, Krishna, you are a child, or you are just a child. He's praising him with Aishwarya, because still Brahma has lots of respect for Krishna, his master, guru, father, the almighty God, and so on. Still the Aishwarya element is prominent here, but he starts to have this glimpse of, oh, tender feet. No, you are the all-worshipable God with tender feet. Oh, so gradually the Aishwarya will recede to the background and give place to more and more prominence of this intimacy that he wants to attain. And also, to say that Mridupade also connotes Krishna's many qualities, because the word Mridu means soft, and Pade means feet, but can mean many other things. And Pade can mean like platform or position, situation in which one is. So Krishna is in a platform of softness, if you will. No, everything about him is soft, basically. No, he has butter-like heart, if you will. No, he's melting. No, so it's, the point is, the softness is not limited to the feet. But of course, this is very famous, the softness of Krishna's foot soles, and how the Brajavasis meditate on that according to their own feelings. The gopis, it's another chapter. I don't want to go there, that may be too long, but at the end of the Gopi Gita, the gopis are praising Krishna, are praying to Krishna in that way. You know, like when we think about your foot soles, your soft foot soles walking, you know, without shoes, taking the cows to eat, or we are tortured about the idea of the pain you may have been feeling. So we are thinking about offering our breasts so you can put your feet there. Our breast is the softest part in our body. So we're thinking, what's the softest thing we can offer to give you relief? but your feet are so soft that in comparison to that softness, our breasts are so hard. So we at the end think, that won't be a relief to your soft feet. So at the end of the day, we continue crying, thinking about how much your soft feet may be suffering, and things like this, you know. But again, this idea here is that everything about Krishna is soft. And finally, just to conclude our explanation, this last part of the verse that Brahma is saying, you are the son of a cowherd, which basically means Nanda Sutta, you are Nanda Nandan, you are the son of Nanda Maharaj, the king of the cowherds. So the Acharyas explained that by saying that, Brahma is implying that actually all the previous elements he just mentioned that are so unique to Krishna are automatically included in this idea, you are the son of Nanda Maharaj. No? When Krishna is described as the son of Nanda Maharaj, immediately all the other things follow. Because we know, yeah, the son of Nanda Maharaj has all this type of, he's a cowherd, he has this, he has that. And Baladev Vidyabhushan in his commentary mentions, this line is further proof that Krishna is actually the son of Nanda Maharaj. Because sometimes it's this idea, he's the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, and so on. So our Goswamis have explored mind, the Shastra, and shown, no, actually, an expansion of Krishna was born in Mathura from Vasudeva and Devaki, and the original Krishna was born simultaneously from Yashoda and Nanda, and the expansion merged. We spoke, I think, the other day about that. So, basically, this verse is establishing this superiority of Krishna's form. And let me conclude by sharing one last word by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because he will mention here, since we just mentioned Krishna is the son of Nanda and Yashoda Nath of Vasudeva and Devaki, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will say, actually, this verse is not only establishing the superiority of Nanda above Vasudeva, but of Krishna's sweetness about Vishnu's sweetness, or about Krishna's Aishwarya even. So he says like this. Brahma's description reveals the superiority of, and now comes the list. First, the lowly Gunjaberis, lowly, quote unquote, the lowly Gunjaberis of Braj are to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. The superiority of them. The forest garland of white flowers and leaves around Krishna's neck is superior to those made of the Parijata flowers from Swargalok. Second. Third, by mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, his stick and horn, Brahma indicates the superiority of Krishna's cowherd boy form over all others. Four, in mentioning Krishna's soft feet, Brahma indicates that those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints, not available in Vaikuntha. And finally, by stating that Krishna is the son of a cowherder, Brahma shows the superior fortune of Nanda over Vasudeva. So we see, you know, how different truths are being established in the very first verse of the whole Brahma Stuti. So, in conclusion, just to finish, this chapter is relating how Brahma, although he's maintaining a mood of reverence, as we will see, he's not just, again, full-blown Vrajavasi from one moment to the other. While maintaining this Aishwarya, he gradually is immersing himself more and more in this ocean of Krishna's Madhurya. Madhurya, I mean intimacy, not romantic love, but intimacy in the context of Sakya. So when Brahma is praying here to Krishna, I praise you, again, know me, so I can attain you. Remember, I can attain you how? In the form of Bal Gopal, in the form of a child, in the form, like, ideal for Sakyabha. So, in one sense, the whole purpose of the Brahma Stuti is stated right here from the very first verse. Why Brahma is praying? These are the prayers of Brahma. When you pray for something. You have some intention to attain through your prayer. So what's the intention of Brahma? I want to attain you, Krishna, in this particular form, this particular relationship. So from verse 1, and with great eagerness, Brahma is praying in this verse. And this verse somehow summarizes the whole stuti. This is very classical in series, in this type of sections of verses. Generally, many times, not always, but the first verse conglomerates what will be like unpacked in the other verses. So that will happen here. No? The whole Brahma Stuti is summarized here, establishing superiority of Krishna above other forms, and the defining characteristics and the attraction of Brahma in that particular direction. But again, Brahma will elaborate further. We have still 39 verses forward. And he will elaborate further also to make sure that his ideal is philosophically supportable. Not just like speculation or some emotional way, but is supported by proper Shastra. So it's interesting because while Brahma is praying, he himself is, like, how to say, testing his bhav under the light of Siddhanta. Now I'm feeling this, but let's see how much what I feel is legal, if you will. It's in the parameters of Tattva and Siddhanta. So he will be pronouncing all these prayers that actually will be further confirming, yes, no, what you feel is real, what you long for is supported by Shastra. Because remember, Brahma is still bewildered, feeling something, but not sure, like, if it's correct, as we mentioned today. Your beauty is so great. I love you. Can I say that? I'm correct with this. I'm feeling this. I'm having this discovering, awakening. So Brahma himself, through his prayers, is further finding confirmation to, yes, this is what I want. So this expresses here in the first verse, but again, Brahma himself will prove to himself more. Yeah, this is the whole thing. And we will see eventually how this unfolds and how this culminates in the last verse with he just almost in ecstasy passing out, glorifying the Brajabhava, the Brajabhas and the Gopas in particular. No? But today we'll finish here. First verse, sorry for the extension, but actually I tried to summarize as much as I could. And next class we'll continue with verse number 2, basically.
Could you just, you talk about Brahma Haridas, and it strikes me that in that Leela, in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, there's no Sakya Ras there really, I mean, with Brahma Haridas. Can you kind of explain that a little bit? Because is Brahma coming to earth as a simple soul, shall we say, and being humbled?
I mean, in Gaur Leela, there's in one sense no Sakya Ras in the sense that the standard of, I mean, Gaur Leela is a different Leela.
Right.
It's the same Leela and it's different at the same time because Mahaprabhu is Krishna, but in a different mood. So Navadvipa is Vrindavan in a different mood. Gaur Leela is Braja Leela in a different mood. So according to the mood in which Bhagavan is situated, all the servants adjust to that. No, it's not that I will relate to Krishna as I like. No, I will relate to him according to the mood he is in. So as we know, Mahaprabhu in Navadvipa Leela, Gaur Leela, is a very unique mood, very specific experiment. I like to think of Gaur Leela as a laboratory. No, laboratory, you say? Mm-hmm. When you go to make some experiment, Krishna is trying to taste Radha Bhav. That's a very risky experiment and very complex one. So the devotees need to adjust to that and assist accordingly. So Mahaprabhu is in certain mood that the servants have to adjust and serve him according to that mood, basically. So there's no conflict in rasa. And the mood, of course, in Gaur Leela is dasya. No? Everyone is serving Mahaprabhu in dasya. I mean, a few exceptions, you may speak about Sachima and so on, but generally, and the window of opportunity for us will be in dasya. But the dasya we find in Gaur Leela is tinged with sakya. So in that sense, we could speak about the presence of sakya in Gaur Leela. It's not the dasya of Vaikuntha or Narayan. It's more the dasya that we find in Vrindavan. There's dasya in Vrindavan also. So there's some corresponding form of the... And the dasya in Vrindavan is mixed with sakya. So some version of it adjust in Gaur Leela accordingly to the need of the moment. So in that way we could say there is some sakya in Gaur Leela, no? It's a type of sakya which also it's a sakya, it's a friendship, it's an intimacy and confidence mixed with servanthood, which somehow is what we are supposed to develop with our guru as well. Rupa Goswami said Bishram Bena Guru Seva. You are to serve your guru with intimacy and confidence. Of course, it's not just like a cheap thing because you can try to be confident and intimate and be familiar, and familiarity breeds contempt. There has to be reverence and servanthood, but eventually the relationship has to evolve to one of friendship, a type of friendship, Again, not friendship. There are different types of friendship, not like just equals. But there is, like with one's father, the relationship somehow ideally evolves into a type of friendship. Mm-hmm. The father is still the father, and the son is still the son. That's clear. But there is some type of friendship that is very desirable. So guru, in one sense, is a kind of spiritual father. So ideally, the relationship has to evolve to a type of friendship that still retains this, of course, notion, you are my father, you are my master, I'm your servant. But there is some sweet intimacy and confidence in the relationship. So that's similar to what's supposed to, we are supposed to express in Gaur Lila towards Mahaprabhu, Dasya with Sakya. So that will be the Sakya, I will say, playing itself out there. No?
I think there's also the example of Nityananda and Haridas when they're going out to try and convert
Jagai Madai.
That's a very funny leela, actually.
Yeah.
Very humorous. Yeah. So I was thinking, there is Sakya, but it isn't necessarily with Lord Chaitanya. It's more with...
Among the associates,
yeah,
if you will.
But also, you know, Nityananda and his Dvaidas Gopas, they have a very humorous
I was, I was mostly speaking in connection to Mahaprabhu himself.
Yes.
But among associates themselves, there may be another type of mood, if you will, especially like the examples you mentioned. I mean, if we want to go to Dwadasa Gopals and all that, of course, I mean, what to do?
I hadn't remembered that, and I thought, it struck me. I was listening. In my mind, I was reading Chaitanya Bhagavat and that whole pastime, you know, the Haridas is saying, you got to slow down, you know, we're going to be killed if we keep doing this, you know. And Nityananda's like, yeah, let's go do it, you know, kind of thing. So he's dragging Haridas along into his kind of madness, you know.
Yeah. And then Haridas is complaining to Mahaprabhu, like, you send me with this crazy fellow to preach to people, and he goes to the worst possible place. They're almost killing us. And Nityananda was like totally in another dimension.
Haridas can't run as fast.
Yeah, he was older.
Nityananda can run.
Exactly.
Having been chased, but he's running behind.
Yeah. And even Nityananda and Advaita, you know, when
that's another separate chapter. There are so many Nityananda versus Advaita, Lila, versus, right, quote unquote, yes. Very interesting.
That's actually quite a pretty
story. I mean, whatever is Nityananda Prabhu, there will be, no matter who is the second party, but Nityananda will invoke Sakya somehow, because he's Balaram, he's the very spirit of this, of the deity, of presiding deity of Hasya Ras, now this Lokta Ras.
Raghunath Das, when the Panihati festival, when he puts his foot in his head.
You're a thief, I will chastise you.
I was thinking with the, probably you asked that question, so with Haridas and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as far as Sakya.
Right.
And Brahma's created the offense, so he remains very humble in front of Mahaprabhu.
That's
why he's in a humble position. But you see, Mahaprabhu is sometimes, you know, some of the Leela you read, he's relating to Haridas in a very friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
In a very friendly way. He would every day take prasadam for him from Jagannath Puri and take prasadam for him.
And even dance when he passed away on the beach.
Yeah,
he danced with him in his arms.
Mahaprabhu was relating in a friendly way. I think Haridas was shy. I'm an offender.
I was hearing that. So, Marumangala was the son of Krishna and Balaram's teacher,
Sandipani
Muni. And when he was, he asked Krishna to bring him back from the dead, his son, and that when he came back, he called him the Kali Guru, Kali. So does that mean friend? So it was kind of like,
I mean, who called him?
Krishna called Madhumangala Kali Guru.
Interesting. So,
do you know what Kali means? I tried to Google it wasn't a Sanskrit dictionary, but one thing said, like, fierce warrior, another thing said, soft friend.
Kali has to do a lot with game. No?
Yeah.
Yeah, every time we use the word, pastime, sometimes it's like a synonym for por lila, basically. No? Like keli. I mean, I'm not saying that's only that, but just what I know.
Yeah,
but
keli also, yes, Maharaj, that's right. Yeah. Punjabi keli means play.
Okay.
Play.
Yeah, I have here the Monier Williams dictionary. Say keli. I mean, some words. Play,
yeah.
Sport, amorous sport, pastime, amusement. And on another line is like disguise or concealment. And on another line, it can refer to the earth. So again, Sanskrit is so much about the context, and then the full
right.
meaning comes. So, I mean,
very
Madhav Mangal may deserve many of those titles. He's the guru of play, the guru of pastime, the guru of amusement. Yeah, he creates so many of those moments constantly. Yeah. Okay, Shri Madhav Mangala ki jai, Shri Haridas Brahma Haridas Thakur ki jai, Shri Nityananda Prabhu ki jai, Shri Gurudev ki jai, Shri Man Mahaprabhu ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Shri Shri Brajanan Haladarju ki jai, Shri Bhagavan ki jai, Grantara Shri Madhvagavatam ki jai, Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda ki jai.